Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pony Sync call for the 24th of January, 2018. Sean's not here today, so I am the honorary Sean. I'm a little behind on issues and pull requests, so I'll just dive into this, but if anyone has anything they want to cover, jump in early and often. The first one I wanted to have a quick look at was PR 2513, which is add foolish support for network socket get and set options. And Scott, I know this has a circle CI error, which I definitely don't understand, but I think I do understand the failure to reach quiescence, which is that it seems like maybe it's left an asynchronous IO event subscribed, so it thinks there might be future async IO input, so it's refusing to detect quiescence on the theory that something is waiting for network IO.
Yeah, that occurred to me not so long ago.
Oh, cool.
And the main side effect of that behavior right now is that it forces Circle CI to wait for, you know, 10 minutes or something like that before it finally gives up.
Okay, less than ideal.
If I undo the... if I undo the patch to the TCP connection dot pony, then the error goes away. So my exposure of the FD variable changing its name so it's public, that is doing something, and it only happens in the Docker container.
Interesting.
I'll figure that out. I'm more interested in the feelings of other people of, wouldn't it be great if we could use set sock opt and get sock opt more generally?
I think it's a pretty good idea. Interestingly, with a lot of this stuff, there's that tension, which I'm sure you're totally familiar with, of should you expose the low-level socket API and then let people just smash their sockets into whatever ridiculous state they want to, which is great because it's flexible, or do you try and have like use cases that are built in? And of course, you know, my leaning on that is that it's better just to expose everything because we're not going to think of the use cases. But if other people have different opinions, that's fair to listen to, of course.
Yeah, a lot of the magic numbers, the constants, they're all C preprocessor constant like things. So is there a way using the FFI to be able to get at those?
Right now, no, sadly.
I didn't think so.
Unfortunately, your approach of where you wrote the PonyOS sock op level and you just basically picked your own constants and that are, you know, pulled from a specific one and then map to whatever the underlying thing is. Mm-hmm. That is sadly the only thing to do right now.
Right, yeah.
The other option is to look at something that someone's talked about a while ago, which is at what point do you want to talk about like using Clang to parse C header files. And it's just problematic, right? It's tricky. Which
problematic header? In that it's finicky and easy to break, or even easier to shoot yourself in the foot, or what kind of problematic?
In the sense that it would mean essentially adding all of Clang to the Pony compiler, which does not seem like a great plan. To add a C compiler to the Pony compiler, it's very difficult to get just the bits of Clang that you want. And in addition, it means there's a whole set of things that, like resolving the location of such header files, that it's not actually standard, right? Everything does it a little bit differently. So there hasn't been anything proposed that sounds like the right fit yet. And there is no simple solution in the sense of, oh, well, if we only parsed such and such, it still doesn't work, right? Because constants get defined in every conceivable permutation of C, right? Like there's some crazy macro plus enum plus whatever for anything you can think of. So if you have good ideas on that, that would be fantastic. But so far, we're a bit on the, sadly, this seems to, what you've done seems to be the best way right now.
Okay. Once I started down the road of what would it take to get at those numbers, then I thought, well, maybe someone wants to get at some of those esoteric, you know, socket tops, socket types. You know, maybe someone's still developing with IPX and Pony would be the perfect language, if only.
Yeah.
One thing I noted in the PR is that I didn't find any additional options that are available often in Windows land.
So. Okay. Cool. Yeah. That's a good point. I don't know what the situation is there. So much of Windows land socket stuff is exactly the same functionality, but hidden under some different constant, which is unfortunate, but there you go. Yeah. I think if we were to add it with this, and then if Windows people want to extend it, that's fine. I think that's a very reasonable thing to do. Or if someone found that, you know, something didn't work in a cross-platform build, we could extend it then. Trying to make sure that we have everything comprehensively sounds crazy hard. Whereas letting it build up over time seems much more reasonable. Mm-hmm. If that makes
sense. No, that does make sense. Continuing down other questions I had about this, a lot of the other sort of constants use this style of using a single primitive per constant, and this PR uses a single primitive with a bunch of functions in it.
Yeah.
But that's because there were over 200 of them. So stylistically, I'm curious what you all think.
Both are fine as far as I'm concerned. So a primitive, of course, is a first class parameterized module in functional programming speak. And in that sense, right, linking these things together in a primitive is fine. There's really no situation in which you're going to be looking for a type that happens to you know, have the same interface as some OS sock ops type, right? It's fine. These really, a module that was going to be a replacement for OS sock op really would have to supply all this stuff. So I think it's totally fine. The only times where I've gone down, not the only, I've probably been very inconsistent about it, but in my mind, the times when I've gone down the route of a separate primitive for each constant is where they're somehow independent when I'm thinking about the problem, that they're not linked, whereas these are so clearly, you know, one linked module. So I do it your way, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, agreed about that. One thing that I don't understand at the moment is you talk about having the FD exposed for so that you don't have to set things from a behavior. But if it's exposed as a field, you already need to have synchronous access to the actor, right? Which means you need to be inside of you already need to have synchronous access to an actor, so you could make the socket option functions a method of the TCP connection rather than making so basically, I guess what I would expect, right? This doesn't have to be how it is, but what I would expect when I saw something like this would be to have like you know, set socket option, get socket option as fun ref of the, well, fun ref and fun box respectively of the TCP connection, and then have the FD stay hidden and have OS sock ops just return the integer the integer constant rather than actually calling the FFI call.
I think I see. Is the current get and set sock opt API just a figment of history, or because in theory all of the other socket option twiddling things that are in the runtime are not done that way.
That's interesting. So for because the PonyOS get sock opt and PonyOS set sock opt that you supply, that's a good point, Jeff. Those could be done entirely in Pony. It's really just the translation from a constant to some possibly macro derived constant, right? The really platform specific stuff that kind of goes into the C file because of the need to process header files. That's a good point. Yeah, it could be funbox and funref, and then the notifier on various events could be set up to set socket options. If that makes any sense. Is that making sense? In the sense that you can call set socopt and get socopt directly from via FFI.
Mm-hmm. I can give it a try. If it's less ugly, and it would probably then also duck whatever container versus VM testing hassle that I'm having.
For receive buff and send buff, since they are set sock opt, is it relying on a different var arg type behavior or level?
No, I was continuing with what I thought was the style of those helper functions elsewhere in that C code.
So that code is my fault, and I'd done it this way originally. Because I was just hacking in no delay instead of doing the right thing. But you've done the right thing. So in some sense, maybe it would be better to kill off things like the PonyOS no delay call and do it your way. One of the ones that can't be done that way, unfortunately, or it seems quite difficult to do it that way, is keep alive. Because it has such incredibly different behavior depending on platform. It's possible. I guess it could be done. Actually, we have better platform-specific stuff now, so it might be able to be done. But in some sense, I wouldn't wish re-implementing that on anybody. So, I'm just sort of looking back through a bunch of this stuff. It seems like no delay is sort of the main one, isn't it? That's... Yeah, your way is just better. Any other thoughts on that from anyone? It seems nice to have this stuff out of the runtime when possible.
I just wanted to comment that I think I misunderstood what was going on here, so that may have caused some confusion from my previous comment. I understand it better now. I kind of skipped past the. I thought the OS sock opt was actually setting and getting as part of the function, but it's just translating. I still think that in terms of like the point that I was hitting on before, which is that I think we could still keep the FD hidden. If TCP connection just provides a function to get and set socket options.
Yeah, a funref and a funbox. I think that's a good idea on the theory that the unfortunate thing about FDs is making it public means that it's clonable in a weird way, right?
Right. Not people that you might do really terrible stuff with it if it's public.
Sorry?
Sorry, I just said people might do really terrible stuff with it if it's public.
Yeah, I mean, not that you can stop that. I mean, you can just invent an integer and do all kinds of stuff, right? Like, it's pretty bad. But at least we're not sort of semi-encouraging it by making it public. Does that make sense to you, Scott, about having the wrapper functions on the TCP connection type?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give it a whirl.
All right, cool. Awesome.
Yeah, especially when you made it there, it was already there, right? I guess it had to be because of the implementation. But if it's their FD as a field, that means that somebody could just like inject another FD into your open TCP connection. And Yeah,
it's pretty gruesome. Not that it helps much anyway, given that you can just start inventing integers and calling socket functions on them and seeing what happens. But
right, but you could screw stuff up without FFI, I think, right? You could open two TCP connections and then copy the FD from one to the other or something like that, right? And now you've got, possibly screwing up various like OS level stuff without having to use FFI.
Yep, you're right. Yeah. All right, cool. Are there other... looking at 2503 as a PR. This has conflicts. And I know Benoit has some comments on this, but it looks like this is the roughly right thing to do.
Sorry, which one?
I'm sorry, 2503. Downgrade ISO and trend to ref when replacing this in a box method.
Yeah, sorry, I haven't had time to address the comments.
Oh, hey, Paul.
Hey, I'll do that soon. And to what Joe has said, I spent some time thinking about it, and I think it's fine with auto recovery. But I'm not fully familiar with how auto recovery is implemented, so I need to look at it again.
Probably wrongly. So, I wrote it a long time ago, but
yeah, I need to fix the AST3 thing. This is where I wish we had not manual memory management. But yeah.
Soon, TM. That means not very soon, but I am working on it very slowly.
Not long now. All right, cool. So another one is 2499, forbid impossible pattern matching on generic capabilities. And there's for some reason, the Travis build isn't going. Not clear why it's not going. But Benoit's explanation seems pretty good to me. Is there any more concerns?
Matthias asked a question about adding a test case. I'm not sure if that got added yet. Does it plug it in?
Ah, yeah. Okay.
I add a test about that.
Ah, cool. I love that while the explanation is complex and tricky, the code change is hilarious and brilliant. okay, cool. I don't know if anyone saw, but that code change basically removes a bunch of code and makes the code simpler. All right. 2485. I know Link was looking at this, and it's built fully now. And this was the report count parameter on message U bench. I know Wink's not here, but this looks pretty straightforward and a nice and a nice change. Worth merging?
I think so. He's either the second or third person to have asked for this particular feature, and now that all of the CI things are officially green.
All right.
Yeah. Awesome.
And then I will enjoy clicking squash and merge. Done. All right. For just a quick look at 2466, which is do not catch foreign exceptions in pony try blocks. I suspect the thing with Windows has to do with the way structured exception handling works interacting with the way LLVM generates code, where LLVM does it generates code using language specific data areas and stack unwinding. And it's a kind of a strange mismatch. I'm not sure if people looking at that on the LLVM front, I think originally LLVM simply could not do exception handling of any kind on Windows. And then this stuff has been put in and it works, but I think it's missing that because of some mismatch there that I'm not really sure about. My temptation would be to disable the test for Windows. I'm not really sure why Travis didn't finish. That seems weird, but to disable the test for Windows and just add it as a changelog comment to say that this doesn't work right on Windows, and it's open for fixing if someone understands structured exception handling well enough. I think that's enough of an edge case that it's better to get this in than to leave it hanging around, if that makes any sense.
That seems like it makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, cool. Funnily enough, structured exception handling is actually really nice, and it has a lot of benefits over the way exception handling is often done on other systems. Unfortunately, it was patented, and that has led to some problems with adoption or documentation or understanding it or all sorts of other things. I am in no way criticizing my employer. Cool. I'll leave a quick comment here. All right. For 2464, include optimization bug example. I'm confused I'm just confused by this one. Does anyone know why this is in?
Yeah, so this is from the
LLVM bug,
from issue number 2280.
Yeah,
which was caused by an LLVM bug. So the question here is: should we add tests for bugs that were on LLVM's side and were fixed, or should we?
I really don't think we should be having regression tests versus LLVM bugs. That seems problematic. In some sense, they will have regression tests or not, depending. And for us, it's just a question of linking the right LLVM version. I'm afraid of just introducing a situation where we're mirroring their regression suite.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Okay. Maybe we can write that up and let Esgebi know that. Let Stuart know that it's certainly appreciated, but I don't think it's quite the right way to go about it. Which actually he says right at the top of his thing, so he already knows that. Okay, cool. All right, excellent. Are there any other PRs that people want to go over? This is sort of the traditional halfway point in which if there's specific stuff people want to go over. Okay. Excellent. Let's have a quick look at some issues that are marked needs discussion during sync. Let's look at 2497, compiler seg faults. Well done, Theo, is what I have to say on that one. And Dubious Jim, thank you very much. That's absolutely just a bug in the type checker. Okay, cool. Sorry, I thought maybe this was going to be something more to look at. That's a short discussion. I'll leave a comment.
Yeah, I think the only question to answer is what pass to do it in, and I'm probably the syntax pass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it's based on when recursion is detected. That an element in a union type, no matter how deep, should qualify as recursion.
Right, but you should be able to, in the syntax pass, you should be able to get the closest constraint AST and then go up a fixed number of ASTs from there to reach the left-hand side of the constraint, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you should be able to detect it as early as the syntax pass, I imagine.
It could be an alias.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think it does.
Which number was that?
2497.
Okay.
And it's basically another example of tricky recursion edge cases. All right, cool. So there's a new one, 2512, unshift can corrupt array.
So for that one, if somebody is able to test it with LLVM 3.9, that would be interesting because I'm suspecting that this is caused by the bugs that we have with the heap to stack optimization pass on LLVM 5.
Ah, okay.
I can check that right now.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Benoit, could you put a quick comment on there?
Okay.
Awesome. All right. There's an interesting one opened up, which is 2509, which is the compiler itself. And I wonder if it was fixed when CIDR T-World moved to LLVM 3.9.1, which is great. But I wonder if we should be a bit more aggressive about refusing to compile with 3.7 and 3.8. But I'm not sure exactly what we could do with that.
So I have a comment in the middle from 4 days ago. I was seeing one of the Wallaroo test suites failing for not exactly the same reason, but a similar one.
Okay.
And it also disappeared when moving from LLVM 3.8.1 to 3.9.1. I spent a few hours messing around with the standard allocator in OSX and also using the Jason Evans malloc. Okay. Trying to get it to happen again, and I couldn't, so I gave up. But it was kind of weird.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. Okay.
And that comment has the commit mentioned where the behavior changed according to git bisect.
Oh, thank you. Oh, nice.
So I think that was Benoit. I'm not 100% certain, but at any rate, that's where the difference between 3.8.1 and 3.9.1 pops up. That's as much as I know.
Okay. That's interesting because that commit, the LLVM change is LLVM disposed target data. So I suspect because the error is a double free, and I suspect target data on 3.8.1 was being freed by some owning object, whereas in 3.9.1 it's not.
Yeah, it looks like it, because looking at the code in init module on 11.3.8. We use LLVM get target machine data, and on 3.9 and above, we use LLVM create target data layout.
There you go.
So, yeah.
All right, cool. Now we know. That is good. Knowing is half the battle, as they say. All right, cool. Then I guess really it's nice work, Scott. And I think... maybe if we could be a little bit more aggressive about saying no to old LLVM versions from the makefile, that would be nice. But not totally sure that we should put too much pork into that, right? It's make issues are always going to happen. So
what we could do is simply remove the if dev stuff with LLVM 3.7 and LLVM 3.8, sorry, from the compiler.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
So that would also simplify the code in the code generator. So if there are no objections to completely removing LLVim 3.7 and 3.8 support from the I agree with that.
Ah, fantastic. Great. Let's do it.
Okay, then I'll add a comment on the issue saying that.
Excellent.
The only other wrinkle is that in the error that I saw in the in one of the Wallaroo test suites, it was not a double free. It was a pointer being freed was not allocated.
Oh, that's exciting. Huh. Well, that may come back to bite us then. All right.
Having thrown that grenade into the conversation, I'm pretty cool with dropping the 3.7 and 3.8 support. So yeah,
it's at least a start.
Yes.
All right. Cool. Wink has another nice one in 2508, and it started out with a rather large example, and I was a little bit worried, but then he has his simpler version, which is vastly simpler. And the fact that this is crashing is baffling to me. I can't imagine what horrible thing I've done to end up with that crashing. But the example is just an attempt to call a non-existent method from the main actor. Which is surprising, to say the least. Is anyone able to replicate this?
Yeah, I just did.
That's wild. Okay, well, needs fixing. The nice part is that should at least be pretty straightforward to track down.
Is the compiler trying to search for alternate spellings?
It's possible. I know that Andy McNeil added some least distant stuff to suggest alternate names at one point. So maybe it is. Maybe that's the problem. That's interesting. Yeah. Good guess. Yeah. At least that one should hopefully be relatively low-hanging fruit. Although, geez, it not working is... Oops. All right, let's have a quick look at 2507. So Benoit is pointing out that this is expected. Oh, I see, right. And so it is. Because we can't guarantee that if X type is not a subtype of A, in the else clause, we haven't made the guarantee that it's a subtype of B, even though it is. Thus the else if.
Yeah, this would need like exhaustive checking on if types.
Yep. Yep, which is what Benoit points out. Benoit, you're right. I don't have anything else to say on this one. Benoit's right.
And I said in my comment that I don't think it should be too hard to add the exhaustive checks for if type, but thinking a bit more about that, I think that the implementation will be non-trivial, because simply looking at a simple case like Well, if you take that, the if you take a theoretical example, and you add the LSIF for B, then it still won't be exhaustive because X could be verified with the union type itself. And I'm not really sure how to handle that in the implementation. So if anyone wants to try to implement that, there are some complex edge cases that should be handled.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. The other thing going on here, right, is if you use else if, then and you don't assign to X in an else branch, you're going to get an error that says that there's, So that's solved by exhaustive match checking. But what we're still missing is, what you said, which is something that I think I brought up before, which is that we have union types, which represent like, the union of A and B. But when it comes to constraints, we don't have a way to say the type argument can be A or it can be B, but we don't want to allow the type union of A or B, of A union B.
It's the exclusive OR that isn't expressed.
Right.
So, yeah, I was actually thinking about that some time ago, and what we could do is some syntax to specify that we want a type parameter to be a concrete type. So we can already do that in specific cases by intersecting the constraint with an interface with a constructor, because only concrete types can satisfy an interface with a constructor.
Right.
But then it won't cover every constructible type. Because, for example, if you have a new create with no parameters on your interface, then you won't be able to catch things with constructors not named create, or with a create constructor but with some parameters.
Yep.
So I think we need a new syntax.
Okay.
Yeah, and aside from that, I think it would just be more direct to be able to say to have some way of specifying that it has to be concrete without, because it's rather indirect to do this hack with the constructor, right? Like you have to understand that the constructor is not fulfillable on a non-concrete type, and it's just kind of a weird indirect way of specifying that constraint.
Yeah, it's more an implication than a proper constraint specification. You're right. And also, it doesn't let you deal with the case where it's an exclusive OR, but does not necessarily have to be concrete, right? I'm not sure if that's a case. I don't know of one off the top of my head, but it wouldn't deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, I might have examples of that in PonyCC where that would be a nice thing to have, but it's not necessarily a concrete type, which is that, like, I have some, you know, type unions that are for example, when we talk about the AST, I have like a union for, it's like class or primitive or actor or struct, that sort of thing. It is just called type declaration. And
only be one of them.
Well, actually, what I'm thinking of is like a case where you want to deal with like where it's reified with like type decal exclusive or something else, right? So where you actually, you do want the union as one of your options, but you don't want the union that contains that union as one of the options. So like if, in the case of saying A exclusive or B, I think there are some cases where A or B, you know, where A, for example, could end up being something where we want a type union to be the definition of A.
Right. Yeah.
Because then I can do if type, you know, it like it, from then I can say like if type X is you know subtype of type decal, then you know do this stuff that I know I could do on a type decal. Otherwise, you know, take my other case. It was like type decal or like just for the sake of example, we could say it's type decal or use statement because those are the two things you can have at the top of a file. I want to allow any type decal as one case, or the other case is when I want to allow any use statement, but I don't want to allow the union of type decal and use statement.
Yeah. Yep, that makes sense. That's a good example.
So maybe we should, maybe somebody, maybe me should write an RFC for exclusive or in constraints.
I think that sounds reasonable.
I wonder if this also solves our other big problem. I don't remember the issue number, but I'm hoping people remember what I'm talking about when I talk about the big problem. It was the one where there was something else missing from the constraint language. This is jogging anybody's memory. The case of saying that I want to not allow, I'm forgetting it here. It was an issue that Theo opened, I think, or maybe Theo found that it applied to the standard library.
Okay.
Ah, oh, man. What was it? What was the issue?
Did it have to do with the like pattern matching being possible with something like none? Even though that's
yes, it was that issue. I don't think that fully described the issue, but yeah, I think you're thinking of the same one now.
Cool.
Pattern match.
You know, it's not just constraints. It's actually an entire type. Like for example, the int type is a union over the integer types, right? But of course, it isn't. Almost never does anyone want want that. What they want is an exclusive OR. It's one of those because you don't want it to say that a U16 or U32. It counts, right? Am I making any sense at all?
Yeah.
So I wonder if this goes even further and that actually there's, because of concrete implement yeah, there are times when you want to say one or the other, but definitely not both at the same time, and for all type expressions.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it's meaningful for. I'm trying to think if it's meaningful for non-constraints though, like if there's a substantial difference in what you can do with it.
Well, for example, in places where int is used. We're looking for the definition. Right, there it is. In real.pony, int is signed or unsigned. And in the same holds for signed and unsigned, actually. Very often, a constructor, something with a constructor being required gets slapped on there as well, just so that you get a concrete instance, because every usage of that I can think of demands one of those types, not some union of those types. Although any of those types will do. Does that make any sense?
Yes, but I'm not sure that I guess I still don't understand where in the absence of talking about type constraints, like let's say we didn't have generics, I'm not sure where this would actually make an impact.
Yeah, I see what you mean in the sense of, yeah, that's a good point. Because if you're using it somewhere else, you would say this is one of those, but you would have had to have constrained it in advance anyway. That's a good point.
So I found the other issue ticket. It is 2182. It was not filed by Theo, but Theo did some of the most recent research on it after several sync call discussions.
Ah, yes. Yes, I do know this one.
Right. And so I, RFC issue 105, so not PR, but issue 105, in the RFC repo, was where I tried to distill down what I think, based on our previous conversations, what I think we decided that we needed in the type constraint language, which is something like to say that A can be... So I think that this applied only in cases where we didn't have a type constraint. Is that right?
Ah.
And but you need a way to say that like A is something that is not going to cause particular like match the, you know, it's just something that would not cause this match violates capabilities error to come up against some other type.
Yep. Huh.
Because the this match violates capabilities error is something that right now the compiler doesn't have a way to check that on unconstrained type parameters unless we disallow all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I brought it up because I feel like this is another place where like our maybe we need to rethink, like, maybe a constraint type is not, like, maybe it needs, like, extra annotations, or maybe it's not the same, maybe it's not quite the same thing as, like, a regular type expression in Pony. Uh-huh. Maybe it has more information that it needs.
Uh-huh. I like that right there in your comment, you say, only way to make this match safe would be to prove that either A and B are disjoint types, or that they have the same cap. And you could express exactly the first one. The other thing would be to say, and that in some case, bind the capability to introduce an annotation that says we're binding a capability. It could be a capability in this set, but now we're going to use the exact same capability when talking about multiple types. And that would prove the second thing.
Well, it would be like a capability parameter.
I suspect it would be nicer to say to do it in a constraint clause. So imagine if you had something that said A must be bound to B, K, or C, K, and you just leave it there with a little K. And then at the end of the type definition, you say where K is a subset of and give some set of capabilities that it can be in.
Mm-hmm.
So in some sense, by having a more complex constraint clause, outside of the type expression itself, we could bind variables inside the type expression.
Right, and then we have to, yeah, to make the kind of like a solver for that language.
Right. Yeah. And that would do the second part of what you were saying, and the exclusive OR would do the first part. That's some pretty interesting stuff. Joe, do you want to take a stab at writing up some of this?
I would prefer if you or Paul did, because I feel like you have a better grasp on what such a type system might look like. Okay.
Yeah, no problem. In fact, I'm going to see Paul on Friday, so maybe we can have a stab at it then.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Yeah, so yeah, I wonder if it makes sense to look at these problems as being related. Like in both cases, it's something where we say we need a more complex constraint language that can handle describing it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That's interesting to think about it as a constraint language in and of itself. That's quite interesting. Okay, we have nominally 1 minute left, but is there anything that people want to go over before we wrap up? Generally feeling pretty good? Fantastic. Okay, cool. Thanks everybody for coming, and see you next week. I'm gonna stop recording.